People have been asking how I've been doing. I feel like Wednesday was a big turning point for me. Feel like that's the day that I lost that kind of residual pain I had been feeling, and things feel better since then. So I finally feel like I have a little more energy at the end of the day than I did before. I was a little concerned about Friday. Thank you, Corey, for driving me all the time. Corey drove me to almost the Chester County line, and I was doing a presentation there. It was my first presentation since the accident, and the house was something else. Corey said as we made it over the first, you pulled up to the property, and you couldn't even see the house, and then you drove over two big bumps, and you got down to the house, and I was doing this three-hour presentation, and I pulled in to see who was there, and it was unfortunately, the only female that works for the company, her daughter got ill, and so she couldn't make it. And so I pull in, and it's two guys in their 60s who have been construction workers all their life, and two Amish kids, and the Amish owner of the company. I thought, wow, this is going to be a long day. And but we survived. We all did. And the one English guy said, well, I was expecting this to be long and boring, and you made it doable for 3 hours, so hopefully that's true today again, that you can put up with me. It won't be 3 hours this time, though. Today, a couple of things I want to say. We're going to finish up Joseph and the Patriarch series next week, so for those of you who are in Kentucky, you'll miss the final one, but today we get to go back to the story of Joseph. I will say today, as I was preparing this week, it was sad for me because as much as Jacob gives me trouble. I miss Jacob, and when he's getting close to death here, it was very sad. Just so you have an idea of where we're headed during this season of Lent, it's kind of nice. Our theme is to serve others, and we're going to hear about service. Next Sunday, we'll hear about the MDS trip. The people who will go on the MDS trip will give a report of what their experience was like during their time in Kentucky next week. And then after that, we're going to hear from Corey and Heidi as they're going to talk about their experiences in YWAM. And so, again, we'll hear some service-oriented pieces. So that's where we're headed. And so let's go back to Genesis. We're going to start with Genesis in 48. If you remember correctly, Genesis 47 is where we're going to start. If you remember correctly, we had left where Joseph had sent the carts. Do you remember the carts? And the carts went back and got his family, and they bring his family to Egypt. And so now his family's in Egypt with him. And Joseph had come up with this plan to make sure that the people, that his brothers and his dad could live in the land of Goshen. And so today we get to see, so today is going to be kind of a recap, and it's going to be kind of the fulfillment of a lot of things that we have talked about as we've gone through this series. And so it's kind of an interesting process. And again, because this is the patriarchs, we're going to have a twist again, because you can't have a patriarch story without some kind of twist or some kind of trick. And this one is a good twist. Well, it's a different kind of twist. So let's pick up. So again, remember, Joseph had told his brothers, hey, tell the Pharaoh that you are shepherds. And he goes, and Joseph goes and talks to Pharaoh about this as well. So here we go. Verse 1 in Genesis 47. Joseph went and told Pharaoh, my father and brothers and with their flocks and their herds and everything they own have come from the land of Canaan and are now in Goshen. He chose five of his brothers and presented them before Pharaoh. Pharaoh asked his brothers, what is your occupation? Your servants are shepherds, they replied to Pharaoh, just like our fathers were. And they also said to him, we have come to live here for a while because the famine is severe in Canaan and your servants' flocks have no pasture. So now please let your servants settle in Goshen. Pharaoh said to Joseph, your fathers and your brothers have come to you, and the land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and brothers in the best part of the land and let them live in Goshen. And if you know of any among them with special abilities, put them in charge of my own livestock. Then Joseph brought his father Jacob in and presented him before Pharaoh. After Jacob blessed Pharaoh, Pharaoh asked him, how old are you? Jacob said to Pharaoh, the years of my pilgrimage are 130. My years have been few and difficult. They do not equal the years of the pilgrimage of my fathers. Then Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out of his presence. So Joseph settled his father and brothers in Egypt and gave them the property and the best part of the land in the district of the Ramses, as Pharaoh had directed. Joseph also provided his father and brother and all their father's house and all his father's household with food according to the number of their children. So here we see the fulfillment of Joseph's plan. He tells the Pharaoh, he preps Pharaoh, and he tells Pharaoh, hey, my brothers are coming, my father is coming, they're bringing their flocks of sheep, their herds of camel, and their herds of cows. And so he says, it's interesting, as famous as Joseph is, as powerful as Joseph is, he still has to ask the Pharaoh for permission to where his family's going to live. So he had prepped his brothers well. I'd love to know which five brothers he picked, wouldn't you? How did they get selected? Which five did he choose? I don't know. But somehow he chose five brothers to go to Pharaoh. I'm hoping Judah, the new Judah, was part of that, but I don't know that. And so they go to Pharaoh and they say, hey, your servants are shepherds. And Pharaoh says, okay, let's say that you, since you're shepherds, we're going to send you to the land of Goshen. So they send him to the land of Goshen. Again, if we do I have this, Hans, the map? Yeah, so here's again where Goshen is. And again, if you here's the nice thing about Goshen. Goshen is very close to where Joseph is in the leadership of the country. And the other thing to remember, as you can see where the green is, the Goshen is watered well by the Nile. So this is a very fertile land. This is a great land to be raising animals and to be having flocks of sheep and cattle and camels. It's the perfect place for the children of Israel to be. So Joseph's plan comes into action. That Pharaoh asks them what they're doing. They say they're shepherds. And then Pharaoh says to Joseph, hey, your brothers have come to me. And now we're going to settle them in the best part of the land. Let them live in Goshen. And if you know any of your brothers who are really good with animals, select them and they can take over the royal herds. Wow. So Joseph's brothers become herdsmen for Pharaoh and they get to hang out with the cattle. Now remember there's a couple things we know about the Egyptians. The Egyptians do not like to hang out with non-Egyptians. They do not like to intermingle with people who are not Egyptian. In addition, who do they find the most detestable people? Shepherds and herdspeople. And again, this goes back to what we've talked about before. This is God's way of keeping his people from assimilating into the land of Canaan. There was only 70 people, plus or minus a few, depending on the way you count them all up, 70 to 100 people who come to Egypt. And God's trying to figure out, how do I protect my people so they do not become assimilated and get lost among the world? He sends them to Egypt, where the Egyptians can't have anything to do with them because they're detestable, and he protects them. Now, here's another question that you have to think about. God is very concerned that his people don't become assimilated, that they don't become a part of the world. Isn't that a question that we have to struggle with today as the church? How far of separation do we need from the world in order to not become assimilated but still have an impact? So if you think about it, here God in the forming of the country of Israel, the nation of Israel, he's telling them, don't become too close to the world. Don't become too close. Don't become assimilated. Christians are all over the map on how close you can be to the world and not become assimilated. Right? Some are very far away from the world. Some are right among the world. Jesus, when he comes, what does he get accused of doing? Spending too much time with the sinners and the tax collectors. So certainly Jesus didn't want us to completely run away from the world, because that's not what Jesus did. But how do we protect ourselves so that we don't become assimilated into the world while having a witness to the world? How do we become separate, but so separate that we can be attractive to the world rather than separate and be disgusting to the world or to look down on the world with disdain? That's the question that we have to struggle with, and we're not going to talk much more about that, but that's a question I'd like you to consider. What is the distance that we have from the world? How do we keep from becoming like the world? It's hard, right? The world seeks to mold us and pressure us to become like them. It's not even that hard, because some of us likes to be like that. It's a constant battle. Now, so then, Joseph brings his dad in. I'd have loved to have seen this. I can't imagine, by the way, these ragtag people from Canaan coming in, going to meet the Pharaoh. Wouldn't it have been something to see? You could have just seen these shepherds coming in, and here's the Pharaoh of Egypt. And here comes this old man, 130 years old, and he comes in and he blesses him. Now, there's a big, as you can see, when he leaves him, he blesses him again. And is that just a greeting or is that a real blessing? I'm going to pretend it's a real blessing, and that seems to be what most people think here. I don't know what kind of blessing he gave the Pharaoh. But think about this. The Pharaoh would have been viewed as what? A god. He would have been viewed as a god. Here's this old 130-year-old patriarch, Jacob, who comes in and he blesses Pharaoh. What do we know about blessings? The greater blesses the lesser. Melchizedek blessed Abraham, which made his priesthood the greatest priesthood, right? So in this case, we get to see Jacob blessing Pharaoh, the greater blessing the lesser. Now, here's another thing. Do you remember when Abraham said, when God said to Abraham, you will bless the whole world. Oh, the whole world will be blessed through you. Those that bless you, I will bless. Those who curse you, I will curse. God is blessing Pharaoh who blessed the children of Israel. And by Joseph, as we're going to continue to find out, he is blessing the whole world with the bread of life. He gets to bless the known world at that time through bread. Again, a type of Christ, right? Jesus is the bread of the world, the bread of life. And so Joseph, too, is the bread of life here. So Jacob comes in. He gives a little speech after Pharaoh asks him, how old are you? I love Jacob's answer. Think of all the time we've spent with Jacob, and we think about who he is. The years of my pilgrimage are 130. I like it. Jacob is saying what? This is my life from, this is a pilgrimage. This is not my home. I'm on a destiny here. I'm going to my heavenly home. And he's also letting Pharaoh know, we're not here forever. We're only here for a while. Didn't his brothers say this? Yes, we've come here to live for a while. His brothers are telling Pharaoh, we're not here forever. Just a small note. Twyla and I have had to get used to the way people in Pennsylvania use the term a while. It's not the way we do in the Midwest. And so it's been, for those of you who did not grow up in the East Coast, a while as the way it's used in PA is very different, right, for those Midwesterners and Southerners. And so, you know, a while means you do it for a while. I'm always, the first time I went to a restaurant and the waitress said, I'm going to bring you a water a while, I thought, huh, how is she going to do that? Is she going to just stop halfway and then and just stay? That's right. It is such a Pennsylvania thing. Waitresses bring you water a while. In Pennsylvania, it means a very different thing from what I grew up with. Anyways, a while here means they're going to be here for a short time. And so Jacob and his sons are saying, we're not going to be in Egypt forever. They're going to be in Egypt a long time. 400 years. A lot longer than they thought, I believe. Now, he says, my years have been few but difficult. I don't think Jacob is being overly pessimistic, overly down on himself. His years have not compared to the years that his father Abraham and Isaac have lived. And have they been difficult? You bet they have. Has Jacob made it easy? No. But his years have not been pleasant. That's where many of us are. Our years are difficult, mixed in with joy. Then he says what? They do not equal the pilgrimage of my fathers. Then Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out of his presence. So Joseph settled his father and his brothers in Egypt and gave them property in the best part of the land of the district of the Ramses, as Pharaoh had directed him. You all, this is a type of Christ. Joseph provided his father and his brothers and their household according to the number of children. Joseph met all their needs when it come to food. Jesus is the source of sustenance for us in the same way. Joseph supplied all their needs. Meanwhile, there's a famine going on. So if you imagine this was a story that we'd be looking at here, and then we'd be meanwhile back at the ranch. So let's go back to the ranch or back to the kingdom. There was no food. However, in a whole region, because the famine was severe, both Egypt and Canaan wasted away because of the famine. Joseph collected all the money that was found in Egypt and Canaan in payment for the grain that they were buying. He brought it to Pharaoh's palace. He didn't steal it for himself. When the money of the people of Egypt and Canaan were gone, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us food. Why should we die before your eyes? Our money is gone." "Then bring your livestock," said Joseph. "I will sell you your food in exchange for your livestock, since your money is gone." So they brought in their livestock to Joseph, and he gave them their food in exchange for their horses, their sheep, and their goats, their cattle and donkeys. And he brought them through the year with food in exchange for all their livestock. When the years was over, they came to him the following year and said to him, "We can't hide from our Lord the fact that since our money is gone and our livestock belongs to you, there is nothing left except our bodies and our land. Why should we perish before your eyes, we and our land as well? Buy us and our land in exchange for food, and we with our land will be in bondage to Pharaoh. Give us seed so that we may live and not die, and the land may not become desolate." So Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. The Egyptians, once and all, sold their fields, and because the famine was too severe for them, the land became Pharaoh's, and everything he did, the land became Pharaoh's, and Joseph reduced the people to servitude. Some versions it says put them in cities, from one end of Egypt to the other. However, he did not buy the land of the priests, because they received a regular allotment from Pharaoh and had food enough from the allotment Pharaoh gave them. This is why they did not sell their land. Joseph said to the people, "Now that I've bought you and your land today for Pharaoh, there is seed for you so you can plant the ground. And when the crops are in, give a fifth of it to Pharaoh, and four-fifths so you can keep for the seeds for the family, the fields, and for food for yourself and your household and your children." "You have saved our lives," they said. "May we find favor in the eyes of our Lord. We will be in bondage to Pharaoh." So Joseph established it as a law in the land of Egypt, still in force today, that a one-fifth of the produce, belonged to Pharaoh. It is only the land of the priests that did not become Pharaoh's. So, as you can imagine, there's controversy about what Joseph did here. Some people believe that Joseph was the meanest, cruelest person in the world. Other people said this is great business practices. I don't know. You can debate that over Sunday dinner today. I will say this, though. If you read, what did the people say? Verse 25, "You have saved our lives. May we find favor in the eyes of our Lord. We will be in bondage to Pharaoh." Another interesting principle here. Isn't it interesting in a time of crisis that governments become more powerful? We just kind of live through that, right? One way or the other. But during a time of crisis, governments are strengthened. During this crisis, the country, the government of Egypt was greatly strengthened. They ended up with everything. Everything. Now, again, I'm not going to debate about Joseph's process. However, I will say, generally, I fall on the side of the debate where I think that he did a very, very good thing here. Even though he ended up with people's lives, he ended up with their land. Can you imagine? If that was us today, the government owned everything in the end. I will say, a 20% tax rate is not crazy. Some of you out there would be loved to live with a 20% tax rate. Right? So that's where he ends up with things. But here's the piece that I want to hang on to. Joseph, as a type of Christ, becomes what? That he owns everything. He slowly takes over these people's lives. They give their money, they give their cattle, they give their land, and they give themselves. Isn't that what Jesus asked from us? We give away everything, and he becomes Lord, and we become what? A servant to him. That's what jumps out at me in this passage. That Jesus, like Joseph, wants to have every part of us. Not just our money, not just our possessions, but our land and our bodies. I love the way they say, all we have is our bodies and our land. And that Jesus wants to be Lord of all. It's a great, great picture. And again, thank you, worship team, for the passages about Jesus and what his role, because that's what you get to see here in the life of Joseph. He owns us all, or wants to. But boy, that's hard. Just as hard as it must have been at one time for the Egyptians to say, take everything from us. But isn't it also true that without God, we can be nothing? But that's a battle to fight. Jacob demonstrated that. Okay, now, that's Egypt. Now, back to the Israelites. Verse 27. Now, the Israelis settled in Egypt in the land in the region of Goshen. They had acquired property there, and they were fruitful and increased greatly in number. Jacob lived in Egypt 17 years, and the years of his life were 147. When time drew near for Israel to die, he called for his son Joseph and said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, put your hand under my thigh and promise that you will show me the kindness and faithfulness. Do not bury me in Egypt. But when I rest with my fathers, carry me out of Egypt and bury me where they were buried. I will do so. I will do as you say," he said. "Swear to me," he said. Joseph swore to him, and Israel worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff, or as he bowed down at the foot or the head of his bed. Now, so, Jacob and Joseph were together for how many years before he sold into slavery? 17 years. Joseph was 17 years old when he went into slavery, when he was sold by his brothers. How long did they live together in Egypt? 17 years. Maybe a coincidence, although God likes numbers like that in the Old Testament. So he got 17 years with his son that matched the 17 years that he had his son. Now, that meant there was a lot of years that he didn't get to be with his son, way more than the times that he was with his son. Time for him to die, and he calls his son Joseph under him. And remember the last time we had somebody slide their hand under somebody's thigh? Who was that? Do we all remember? Yes, the servant of Abraham. Abraham said to his servant, "Hey, slide your hand under my thigh and promise me you will what? Find a bride for my son." It's the only other time in the Bible we find somebody sliding their hand under the thigh to secure a promise. I'm glad we don't do that anymore, but it was a way of kind of sealing a promise, right? Can you imagine going to buy a house and the banker says, "Could you slide your hand under my thigh so that we can seal the deal?" Lots of other things would happen besides your house being sold, but just kind of an awkward way to seal the deal that we don't do anymore. But this is a way to say, I want you to be really certain that you're not going to bury me in Egypt. It reminds me of Hebrews, where the Hebrews, the author of Hebrews writes, what? Jacob did not get to see what was promised to him. This is part of that. He doesn't get to see the promised land, what it becomes, but he gets to be buried there. He's asking Joseph, take me back and bury me where Abraham was buried, Sarah was buried. By the way, which of his wives were buried there? Leah! He doesn't get to spend the rest of his life, eternity, he's dead. He doesn't get to spend it with his beloved Rachel. He spends it with Leah. Ah, what's the point there, God? I don't know, other than he loved Leah more than Jacob did. Now, don't bury me, Joseph says, I will do that, and Israel, don't you love the way it switches? It switches back and forth all the time between Jacob and Israel, his name. Israel, not Jacob, worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. This is where we get to see Jacob at the end of his life really focusing more on God. Okay, now for the twist. Sometime later, verse 1 of chapter 48, Joseph was told, "Your father is ill." So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, along with him. Again, if you remember correctly, Manasseh means to what? To forget. Because he said, God has allowed me to forget my days as a child. God has helped me forget my pain from my childhood. And Manasseh is his firstborn. And his secondborn is Ephraim, which means what? Fruitful. God has made me fruitful in a foreign land. God has been faithful, he's helped me overcome my past, and he has made me fruitful in this land. So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, along with him, and Jacob was told, "Your son Joseph has come." change of a name. Israel rallied his strength and sat up on his bed. So here we see Jacob is about to die. Joseph comes in with his two boys, Manasseh and Ephraim, and he presents to him. Jacob says, "Oh, I hear the voice of Joseph," and he rallies and he sits up in his bed. And then listen to this. This is the part that made me sad. We're going to see Jacob go through his life, and he's going to present his life to Joseph. Jacob said to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz." Luz is another word for Bethel. God Almighty appeared to me at Bethel. We've talked about that over and over again, right? How many times God appeared to Jacob at Bethel in the land of Canaan, and he blessed me, and he said to me, "I am going to make you fruitful, increase your number, I will make you a community of people, and I will give you this land as an everlasting possession to your descendants after you." So this is the Abrahamic covenant, and he says to him, listen, and this goes back to Genesis 28 when we covered this. God appeared to him for the first time in the land of Bethel, and he said, "I am going to be with you, and I will be there for you, and I will make you into a great people, and you will have possessions of this land forever. Your descendants will." Now then, first we were speaking Midwest language, now we're going to speak the Southern language. Now then, we're going to use a word that they'd only use in the South that I know of. "Now then, your two sons born to you in Egypt before I came to you here will be reckoned as mine." How many times do we use the word reckoned today? "Ephraim and Manasseh will be mine, just as Reuben and Simeon are mine. Any children born to you after them will be yours. In the territory they inherit, they will be reckoned under the names of their brothers. As I return from Paddan to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Canaan while we were still on the way, a little distance from Ephraim. So I buried her there beside the road to Ephraim, that is Bethlehem." So here's Jacob. Jacob is going through his life and he says, "You know, God first appeared to me at the land of Bethel, at the place of Bethel. And he told me, I'm going to be with you, I'm going to walk with you, I'm going to be faithful with you, and I'm going to be with you. And I'm going to make your descendants mighty, and they're going to possess this land forever." Then he does something really weird here. He says, "You know what? I'm going to take reckoned." I had to look up what reckoned was, because when we say I reckon, that means I guess or I assume, if for those of you who still use that term. But reckon means to count as. So the debt was reckoned to be a certain amount. So what Jacob is going to say here is, "Now that your two sons were born to you in Egypt before I came to you will be counted as mine. They will be counted as mine." So guess who he replaces? Which two sons does he replace with Manasseh and Ephraim? Reuben and Simeon. What did we learn about Reuben and Simeon back in Genesis 34 and 35? They committed sins that what? Stripped them. They had different sins. We can throw Levi in there too, who's not counted here. But they were stripped of their positions. So what we see here happening is Jacob is saying, my firstborn will no longer be my firstborn, and Simeon will no longer be in his place as a secondborn. I'm going to replace those two men with, by the way, Manasseh and Ephraim are probably in their 20s right now. I'm going to replace them with Ephraim and Manasseh. They're going to be my firstborn. Remember, we've talked about this before. Joseph moves into the firstborn position, and he gets the double inheritance of the firstborn, and there you're seeing it happening in real life. I'm going to take you, Joseph, I'm going to divide you into two, and your two sons are going to be my firstborn and my secondborn. And then guess what he says? The rest of your children will be counted or reckoned under them. When they get to the promised land, the rest of your children will not have their own tribes. They will be part of their brothers' tribes. They'll be part of their brothers' tribes. And then he mourns Rachel. Again, I've said it before, the one person that Jacob truly loved was Rachel. He thinks of Rachel all the time. He mourns her loss again. And he said, I had to bury her beside the road near Bethlehem. She didn't get buried where the patriarchs got buried. She got buried under a tree on the way to Bethlehem, which is also interesting, right? Bethlehem, the connection to Bethlehem. when Israel saw the sons of Joseph, he said, "Whose are these?" They are the sons God has given me," Joseph said to his father. Then Israel said, "Bring them to me so that I may bless them." Of course, now somebody's nearly blind, because what would a story be within the patriarchs without somebody being nearly blind? Now Israel's eyes were failing because of his old age. He could hardly see. So Joseph brought his sons close to him, and his father kissed them and embraced them. Israel said to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face again, and now God has allowed me to see your children too." Wow. What a moment. I also try to imagine this. Can you imagine this old man on his deathbed? Here comes this very Egyptian-looking man, dressed in Egyptian clothes, comes into his bedroom with his two boys who would be very Egyptian, right? They grew up in Egypt. They're going to look and smell and act like Egyptians. Joseph is going to look much like an Egyptian. So I'm trying to imagine these Egyptian-like people in this room with this little shepherd who's lived a difficult life. He can't hardly see them. Joseph brings his two boys in front of him, and Jacob says to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face again, and now not only do I get to see your face, but I get to see the face of your children as well." Can you imagine as a parent thinking, "I lost my son is never coming back," and suddenly you not only get to see him, but you just get to see his children. What a moment. And then the verse that is always hard for me. Joseph removed them from Israel's knees and bowed down with his face to the ground. Joseph, the prince of Egypt, reveres his father enough that he takes his boys away from him and he falls on his face in honor and tribute to his father. What a moment. What a moment for these two men who have been separated all those years to have that moment before Jacob dies. And again, you revered your parents in a way that we don't revere our parents today because of the culture and all that goes with them. But here we see the prince of Egypt bowing down in reverence to his dad. To celebrate who his dad was. And his dad, again, as we've talked about many times, has his faults. And he's not a great dad all the time. But here Joseph pays tribute to him. Verse 13, "And Joseph took both of them, Ephraim on the right side of Israel's left hand and Manasseh on the left side of Israel's right hand." By the way, the Bible goes into a great deal of detail here to say that when he brought them up to Jacob, he presented them in such a way that all Israel had to do was reach out his right hand and bless what? Manasseh with his right hand, because again, sorry for you left-handed people, in the Bible's times and many years, right hand was the position of prominence. It's where you blessed. The real blessing was. The left hand was the secondary blessing. So when Joseph presents his boys, he presents them with Manasseh where he's supposed to be and Ephraim where he's supposed to be. And guess what his father does at the very last moment? He doesn't do that. He takes his hand and does this. What? So what Joseph had to be flabbergasted. He had to think, "Dad, what are you doing? I had it easy for you. I can't help that you're blind, but please, just put your hands out. What's this twisting of the hands?" But Israel reached out his right hand and put it on Ephraim's head, and he, even though he was the younger, and crossed his arms and his left hand on Manasseh's head, even though Manasseh was the firstborn. So guess what's going to happen here again? The wrong son is going to get the firstborn blessing. Isaac, not Ishmael. Joseph, not Reuben. Now we have another one here. Sorry, Jacob over Esau as well. Jacob over, so for four generations, it's going to be Isaac, not Ishmael. Jacob, not Esau. Joseph, not Reuben. Now we're going to have the blessing go to whom? Ephraim, not Manasseh. Why? We don't know. God chooses to have mercy who he chooses to have mercy on. He blesses who he chooses to bless. Does it make me crazy sometimes? Yes. God, what's up with that? Who are you? Why do you choose to bless some people and not others when we don't know why? Oh, that drives us crazy, or at least does me. There's got to be a reason. I don't know why Ephraim gets to be the firstborn and Manasseh not. God sets up this rule that the firstborn should be blessed, and then God's always playing with that. Other than I would say God doesn't like to be put in a box, even his own box. But here's the thing. I think God is saying to us, we should what? Pursue the blesser, not the blesser, not the blessing. But isn't it hard when you're the Manasseh? When you're not the one that gets blessed and you see God take your blessing and give it to somebody else? Yes. I mean, assuming that's true, that would be true for me. Then he blessed Joseph. By the way, don't you love the way verse 15 said, then he blessed Joseph, even though he's not blessing Joseph, he's blessing his sons, but he's blessing Joseph through his sons. Listen to this blessing. May God, before whom my father Abraham and Isaac walk faithfully, the God who has been my shepherd. The first time in the Bible we get to see God as the shepherd. The first time in the Bible God is mentioned as a shepherd. Was Jacob a great sheep? No. He was that kind of sheep that you want to kick and beat. Right? Every farm has one of those. And or more than one. Sometimes they have too many of those. But there's always this one animal that just wants to go off and do its own thing. That's Jacob. But he says, you know what? God has been my shepherd who has walked with me all the days of my life. The angel who delivered me from all harm, may he bless these boys. May they call by my name and the name of my father Abraham and Isaac, and may they increase greatly on the earth. What a blessing. He's giving these two boys the same Abrahamic covenant that's been passed down. Now it gets passed on to Ephraim. When Joseph, at least Joseph is not going to follow the tradition of the trickery in his family. He's going to try to make this straight. He's going to try to tell his dad, Dad, you blew it. When Joseph saw what his father had placed his right hand on Ephraim's head, and he was displeased, so he took hold of his father's hand and moved it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to him, no, my father, this one is my firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But Jacob refused and said, I know, my son. He too will become a great people, and he too will become great. Nevertheless, his younger brother will be greater than he. His descendants will become a group of nations. He blessed them that day and said, in your name will Israel pronounce his blessings. May God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. So he put Ephraim in front or ahead of Manasseh. Again, I don't know why. If you know why, you're better than scholars who have looked at this passage for a long time. There is no good reason for what God did. Other than God is God. His ways are higher than our ways. He can bless who he chooses to bless and not bless who he chooses not to bless. The interesting piece is, there is a number of times in the Bible that Israel, the country of Israel, is not referred to as Israel, but they're referred to as Ephraim. I'm going to point out one here. I think I put this in here. This is in Hosea. Look at this. In Hosea, in chapter 8, or chapter 11, what do we get to read here? We get to read, look at this. How can I give you up, Ephraim? How can I hand you over, Israel? Verse 9, I will not carry you out of my fierce anger, nor will I devastate Ephraim again. Verse 12, Ephraim has surrounded me with lies, Israel with deceit, and Judah is unruly against God, even against the faithful Holy One. Here we get to see that Ephraim stands for the entire country of Israel. It's also mentioned in Isaiah where God refers to the country of Israel as Ephraim. Ephraim becomes an important tribe. Now again, all these tribes, Ephraim, Manasseh, all the rest of the tribes eventually get overcome and Judah becomes the one because we worship the Lion of Judah. Verse 21, then Israel said to Joseph, I am about to die, but God will be with you and take you back to the land of your fathers. And I will give you one more ridge of land than your brothers, the ridge I took from the Amorites with my sword and my bow. with my bow. All of a sudden, Jacob shocks everybody, although, again, we just know what the Bible tells us. He says to Joseph, hey, you know, back in the day, I had a fight with the Amorites, and I used my sword and my bow. I'm assuming his boys helped him. And in a battle, I won this certain ridge. Why we bring it up now, I don't know. But I'm going to give you that ridge, Joseph, because you are my firstborn and you are my favorite, and that ridge is yours. We know from the Bible that 400 years later, Joseph's descendants took that ridge. Guess what else happened in that ridge many years ago? Or many years later? Many years later, Jesus meets a Samaritan woman by a well that Jacob dug on that land. That's where the Samaritan woman at the well, the woman at the well, met Jesus. Why in the world Joseph got that ridge? I don't know. There's lots of things that we don't know, more things we don't know sometimes than what we do know. Next time, when we pick up the rest of the story, we're going to talk about Jacob's blessings for his boys and his death, and Joseph's death. They're going to die really quickly together here. And that's where we're headed. That's where we'll finish off next week. Today, though, the piece to remember is that we have a shepherd who will walk with us, even though our days are few and difficult. God the shepherd will walk with us. Jesus asks us to make our entire life and give it to him, that we can be servants of his and that we can be in servitude to what Jesus is asking us to do, because like Joseph, our very life depends on it, because Jesus is our everything, even though sometimes we don't feel that way. The other piece, as I've talked about a number of times, Jacob for me is always an example of how God is faithful despite our unfaithfulness, even though we walk away. Somebody once, when I was reading, I forget where I read this, described Jacob as your dog when you take your dog for a walk. When you take your dog for a walk, they walk with you on the leash, but they go off and smell this, they go off and chase that, they go off and do this, they go that, they go that, they go that. But they always go with you eventually, unless they break free of their leash. And they described Jacob, that's the way his relationship with God was. He walked with God, but he always got caught up in the latest smell or the latest dog, and he went chasing that. But isn't that us? That's true for us too. Father, we do thank you again that you never give up on us. You follow us. You keep chasing us. You keep asking us, please, give me your life. Give me your body. Give me your land. Father, help us in our struggle to do that. Thank you so much that you know that about our hearts. You know our temptation to be assimilated and to become like the world. Father, protect us, protect your church from becoming assimilated, Father, but help us to be the light of the world. Help us to take seriously your command for us to bring others into the kingdom. Thank you so much in your name. Amen.